I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Right. You think this week has gone by quickly or otherwise, Sue?
I'm saying normal. To me, this is normal, like average.
I think I'm going to go with that.
You know what I mean? Nothing fast, nothing slow, just kind of right on target.
But tomorrow is Friday, so we are getting closer to the weekend, and we'll have a Reardon Roundtable. I was kind of looking at the calendar here because I don't know if you've heard, but there's a national election that's coming up here in a couple of weeks. And I'm off next Friday. So if you fast forward from there, so you got tomorrow, which is the 18th, I'm not sure who's going to fill in next week. We hope that it'll be someone that does a roundtable, though. Like, if we get a local host, sometimes, you know, we have
Ryan Recker and his
bench
great,
issues. But... Right, but he doesn't really do a roundtable because he doesn't have people. Ryan does the show from Michigan because he lives up there now. But I guess my point here is I'm making it long-winded. There might only be two more roundtables before the election. So tomorrow, and on the panel, Jane will be here. By the way, she just tweeted something out that's just unbelievable to me that we'll follow up on tomorrow. And it has to do, here's what she said. Now, Jane's not always right, but she said, STL city government, fun fact, the city made more revenue from housing citizens detained by the federal government at the workhouse, $10 million, than it does for all of the operations at the airport, $5.2
million. Holy cow.
Now, that's
Wait
not good,
minute.
Right?
No.
No, I don't think that's good. So we'll talk about maybe that topic. Donna Behringer, state rep, Greg Keller, GOP consultant, will be here tomorrow. All the regular stuff in the 4 o'clock hour with Paul Hall on entertainment. I watched episode 7 of the Monsters thing, the Menendez thing last night. I'm totally into it. So I think it was episode 6. So now I'm on 7.
Oh, okay. Javier Bardem, if he's in anything... It's outstanding.
He plays Jose Menendez and Chloe 70. Last night, the episode I watched really kind of featured, you know, focus on the parents. The first episode before that was that Eric Menendez episode that was just in one continuous shot. But we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow on the show as well. So, of course, yesterday was the big interview with Bret Baier.
And there are critics
who look at what the administration did and say and think differently. Madam Vice President, they're rapping me very hard here.
Yeah, Bret says that when, you know, all that was ending yesterday, this is what happened.
We were supposed to start at 5 p.m. This was the time they gave us. Originally, we were going to do 25 or 30 minutes. They came in and said, well, maybe 20. So it was already getting whittled down. And then the vice president showed up about 5:15. I could tell when we started talking that she was going to be tough to you know, redirect without me trying to interrupt.
Yeah, they were waving their hands, trying to get them to wrap. So you've been in the studio when politicians are in here and they try to do that to me, right? Because that's, I guess, their job. David Strom from hotair.com back with us on this Thursday evening. David, how are you?
Hey, I'm on with you, so I'm having a great day.
That is a great answer. It's really the only answer this afternoon. So, I had Duane Patterson on earlier. We were talking about this. I'm in the camp that thinks that certainly it did not go well for the vice president last night. I don't know how much damage was inflicted. And I think, I know that I'm not trying to criticize you, David. You called it a disaster. I think in some minds it is. But I guess I'm looking at it through the lens of, you know, how it might affect the campaign overall. She got in there. She tangled with Bret Baier. Her side thinks that that was a good performance. Our side does not think it was a good performance. But for me, I guess it was more of what I've seen from the vice president in the past. So I wasn't expecting too much.
Well, I called it a disastrous performance, but I agree with you that it actually doesn't move the needle much because the needle is not movable much.
It doesn't seem it is.
Yeah, I mean, here we are. We're witnessing, an epic collapse of a campaign and at the same time seeing only the most minor changes in the polls. And that has to do with the fact that, Kamala Harris's floor is so high and Trump's ceiling is only so high. It's still pretty low.
Whoop. On that note, David decided to hang up. That's that sound when the call just gets completely
disconnected. Oh, is that what that was? I thought I hit like a microphone.
No, that was just one of those things where, and that's not really where you hang up accidentally. That's where AT&T or Verizon or something like
just
that
goes, bye-bye.
Cuts you off and you don't have it. I'll take a little time as, do we see Ethan out there?
Yeah,
because
he's
that's one thing.
On
I don't have line of sight, so I'm not exactly sure what's going on
he's
here.
He's working.
I will say this, Robert Bryce is coming up. Robert Bryce writes on Substack, and I didn't know about this, but did you know Three Mile Island nuclear plant is starting up again?
I did, but only because I read that this morning.
Yeah, so Microsoft is backing this. Other big tech companies, big banks getting involved. It is a new renewed nuclear energy bandwagon, and Robert Bryce will join us at the bottom of the hour. All right, David, I think we have you back. Sorry, something just happened there, and it took you off the air. It must have been the Harris campaign. They were trying to take you down.
Anyway, what I was saying was to pull something from Donald Trump. her floor is so low, and his ceiling is only a little bit above that. That really, we're talking about moving a few thousand votes one way or another. So a disaster for her it doesn't move the needle that much. Now, I think she is on a path to lose. I also think she could still win. It's all going to be driven by turnout, you know, but she has the, you know, I'm voting blue no matter who vote. So,
well, there's a lot of that blue vote. A lot of it is driven by, you know, certainly Roe v. Wade and that issue here. By the way, here's Doug Schoen, who's, he's a Democrat. Consultant guy. He's on Fox.
The so-called blue wall of Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania is eroding for the Democrats. There is a level of disorganization on the ground and incoherence vis-a-vis the messaging that is clear. And what I'm picking up is that the Harris campaign really doesn't have a closing message or strategy, as we, I think, saw in Bret Baier's interview with Kamala Harris.
So, David, that means, and I think we're seeing, you know, the polling kind of bear out what he's saying. I'm shocked about Michigan, by the way, and even Wisconsin. I lived in Wisconsin for a long time. You're not too far from there up in Minnesota.
Nope.
But the consensus, even on the left, because you can kind of see the panic bleeding through here, is that, yes, in fact, what Doug said there is true, and the polling is certainly starting to favor Trump in these states.
Oh, I think that's absolutely right. And the key to this election, well, there are really two keys to this election. One is, driving turnout. The other is the fact, I think, that we're seeing now is that swing voters often break together in one direction. And it sure looks like we're seeing a preference cascade among swing voters against Kamala Harris. It's not driven by any one thing. We aren't looking at a collapse as happened with Biden. It's driven by everything. Her only message is she's not Donald Trump. And, everybody already knew that.
Well, You knew it last night.
Donald Trump. Let's go back to Donald
that is the entire
Trump,
interview,
Trump,
basically
Donald
in 15
Trump,
seconds.
Yes.
Strom. Essentially, that sums it up, encapsulates it, right?
Well, that is her final message. First they turned up the Trump hatred to 11, then to 12, then to 15, and now it's at about 1,000. If you watch left-wing media, and even Bill Clinton is now echoing this, they're talking about Trump putting people in camps, sending the military out against people. I mean,
rounding up his political enemies, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And executions, I mean, it's just they've turned it up to 10,000. They're hoping that fear will drive enough people out there. Their problem is that, when they turned it up to 11, people, everyone they could persuade has been persuaded. They can turn it up to 1 million, and it doesn't make a difference. People know what they think about Donald Trump. They're deciding, can I stand a guy who I don't like being in the Oval Office for another 4 years? Because that's really what this is about, is people deciding whether or not the swing voters, whether or not they hate Donald Trump so much that they're willing to flush the country down the toilet.
And I have to think that they don't want to flush the toilet. The country down the toilet.
No,
I think that's where they're going to end up. Yeah, exactly. Now, look, the media, let's talk about the media here. David, you wrote something a couple of days ago, and I kind of hammered on this, too, because I saw some of this coverage out there. It started with Mediaite, and then there was a column by Aaron Rupar in The Washington Post and others, and I know you cited this. Trump had this town hall the other night that got a little off the rails because there were medical emergencies, and he starts playing music, and he was charming the crowd. Actually, it was pretty awesome. But if you would have read the media accounts of this, you would have thought it was the biggest, weirdest, they love that word, disaster of a performance ever. Now you got this is interesting, Joanna Cole. I don't know who she is. She's on MSNBC, and she's talking about now they think that Trump is drinking.
I mean, look, I know that Donald Trump says he doesn't drink, but this feels like drunken behavior. I think he's probably microdosing like his friend Elon Musk. It's astonishing behavior, and it's irrational. And if we're exhausted about this campaign, imagine how Donald Trump is feeling. He seems like he's just lost the plot.
Okay, two things about that. And I'd say this, I'm going to send the same message to the Bloomberg guy that interviewed Trump a couple of days ago. And this is from our friend Kevin Kline, who's an actor from right here in St. Louis.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't
you? That's how I feel about them.
Yeah.
But listen to what she's saying right there. You watched the event. I actually took the time to say, okay, let me see what's going on here. And by the way, I did the same thing with Kamala Harris's rally from last Friday night. And maybe it was 2 weeks ago because I'm losing track of time. But at that particular rally in Pennsylvania, the teleprompter went down and she was just completely lost and looked like, you know, an airhead out there. But that never gets any of the media attention. The Washington Post doesn't write about that.
Well, the meme that they're trying to put out there is, you know, Trump is tired, he's deranged, his brain has turned to mush, he's not talking to anyone. I mean, basically, anything they say, you can take to the bank that it's the opposite of the truth.
Pretty much.
I have never seen a more dishonest campaign. It's driven entirely by literal hoaxes. They're hoaxing things. I mean, Terry Moran on ABC was at that event.
After rally. And he called it right, though.
He basically said this was really a charming moment.
I played that audio, David, because, you know, I had to give ABC credit there because they called it the way it was. But all these other outlets keep writing about these things with a completely different narrative. I'll give you another example. This is interesting, too. Let me see if I can find this soundbite. So did you hear, and I don't know if you wrote about this, did you see the podcast that Trump did with these two comedians? And I can't remember what guys' names are, right? So,
but they're sports guys.
Yeah. So he goes on, he yucks it up with them. They seem to be having a really good time. And then there's stories that are written about that say that it was just this disastrous performance by Trump. It was just awful. And now the guy that's doing the podcast, they're comedians, right? So he's trying to go out and do a comedy tour. And what he says is he got dropped from the tour because of that podcast. Listen to this.
You get an email 3.5 hours out. 3.5 hours after the interview, they cancel shows.
Read the exact email because they're canceling my shows, but they're also begging Live Nation to not cancel future shows with them. Like they still want business, but they're not this guy. Now, I don't know if it's a Trump interview, but the day before it came out, we were ready to go and we were going on sale this week. And 3.5 hours afterwards, we get this email.
Yeah.
First off, I want to thank you for thinking of BAM for Andrew Schultz's upcoming comedy show. We are always excited when promoters consider our space for their events.
Yeah, so listen to the way this turns out, though.
After some internal discussions with leadership, it was decided that BAM is not the right fit for this show at this time.
Yeah, internal discussions led to a leadership decision based on an interview with Donald Trump. And by the way, that interview was really good. Here's what it sounded like.
Kamala, it's a little hard to say. She's comrade because she's obviously a communist.
Yeah.
She's horrible. So I call her comrade.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not bad. But when you put the names together, it's a little, you got to be able to pume.
So, I mean, he did great with those guys. He really did. That was the one where he was talking about the weaving. I weave, right? I do the weave. Look, I know that there are people that detest him, but I'd be hard pressed to say, hey, sit down and watch this and tell me that it was a disaster and it wasn't just Trump being Trump.
Well, it is Trump being Trump. And one of the reasons why the people in the corporate media and all the commentators and people on the left really do believe that he is a liar. I think that most of them really do believe that he's a dangerous liar, is because he's a comedian. And so he uses hyperbole, he weaves in stories. It took me years to figure this out. It wasn't until someone else pointed this out to me that if you look at this through the eyes of kind of a performance actor, you know, someone doing a performance, he's actually incredibly funny. The hyperbole is about putting in your mind something that is directionally true. He doesn't mean it literally.
But they take it as literally, and all you have to do, and I will say this, it took me a while too. Now, this goes back to 2016, but I found myself, and this is when I didn't support Trump back in 2016, but I found myself, and I find myself more and more defending him because I get so sick and tired of them misrepresenting. I mean, you can go to the Charlottesville comment in particular, but even on some of the humor where he says stuff that's clearly a joke, and the idiots on The View and on CNN and MSNBC, they want to make it seem like he's being, are they not that smart, or are they just being deceptive, or maybe a combination of the two?
I think it's a combination of the two, and I think that there's sort of two types of people on the left. There are the brainwashers and the brainwashed. The brainwashers know that they are creating a narrative, and they just keep on reinforcing the same thing. I mean, you got to see it in hyperspeed when Kamala came out, where suddenly everything was weird, and joy, or even I forget what the word they used last night for her, testy.
All the headlines said testy. You highlighted that in your column. I know. It was like the talking points went out, right?
Yeah, and the whole point is to brainwash people. You repeat things often enough, like the hoaxes. You repeat it often enough and people just sort of absorb it. And even if they know that something isn't precisely true, there's enough smoke, that there must be a fire. And so you've got the high level people who have a brainwashing operation. And then you have women like at The View, where they're just brainwashed. I mean, they literally believe, what they're saying. And it is absolutely absurd. They're living in a different universe. But that's because they've sort of been, captured by the Truman Show, where, there are people out there creating a reality for them and they believe it is real.
It's true. It is true. It's going to be a damn fun show to watch the day after the election, though, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, talk about must-see TV.
I do worry, though. I mean, you do have, in fact, I think Axios had a story on this. There is a movement among Democrats in Congress to deny Trump certification of his election. Jamie Raskin said it up front, but there apparently are people behind the scenes who, and they're literally referring to January 6th. That they are going to deny him the election on January 6th.
Right. Yeah, because they only want to talk about January 6th. They don't want to talk about what happened in your city after George Floyd, or in my city after Mike Brown, or even after George Floyd. And by the way, here's a question. We'll close on this. Somebody else asked me this today. Where the hell is Tim Walz? Yes. He's still on the ticket?
Well, I mean, Tim Walz, he's my governor.
I know.
So, none of this surprises me. The thing about Tim Walz is he has always been this bad. He's always been a liar. He's always been a radical. But he has been cosseted by the media here and turned into this avatar of the masculine guy who goes out and hunts. And then you see it in reality. And you realize, again, you see the brainwashing at work. I mean, a lot of Minnesotans thought he was what was portrayed. And to the point where Kamala Harris's team did not know how crazy this guy is.
Apparently
how big
not.
A liar he is.
The best thing about Tim Walz, though, I think you would agree, isn't the best thing about Tim Walz being on the ticket, Jim Gaffigan playing him on SNL, because he's nailing it. He's nailing it, Strom. It's unbelievable. Listen, I got to cut you off because I got to go. We're going to have you back one more time before this election with some final thoughts. You have a great weekend, David.
You too.
All right,
bye-bye.
Take care.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events, major elections, world wars, scientific breakthroughs. But we also bring you into the smaller, behind-the-scenes stories. The unsung heroes, secret meetings, even personal grudges that changed the course of history. Listen to and follow History This Week, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with the History Channel. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, I've been talking about this climate change nonsense for a long time, and usually when I talk about the climate change nonsense, I say, wait a second, why aren't we focusing on nuclear energy? And for decades and decades, no one's wanted to pay attention to nuclear energy. We have a great nuclear plant here in Missouri, Callaway County, Fulton. But as Robert Bryce wrote, after decades of decline, the U.S. nuclear energy sector has almost overnight become the hottest topic in the electricity business. This is somewhat encouraging. We're going to find out more from Mr. Bryce this afternoon. His commentary pieces are found on Substack. Robert, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
Great. Thanks, Mark. Glad to be with you again.
Don't sound like Joe Biden. That kind of concerns me here this afternoon. I do it all the time. So what, you know, I got to say, this caught me off guard because I was unaware of this kind of ramping up again. So I'm very encouraged. I'm excited, but I don't know much about it. And I don't think the audience does either. So what happened here?
Well, a quick bit of background, very quick. So the U.S. nuclear sector has been in decline for decades, Mark. I mean, you know, with the closure of nuclear plants over time, you know, we had the Chernobyl, Fukushima, you know, Three Mile Island, you know, all of these things contributed to this anti-nuclear sentiment. And, of course, the Sierra Clubbers and the rest of the, you know, the climate NGOs, so-called climate NGOs, have been adamantly anti-nuclear for decades. But in the past few years, had a new cadre, one of younger activists who are, you know, concerned about climate. So, and they've been pro-nuclear, but then the big split has really happened just in the last, honestly, last couple of months. I mean, the Ukraine war was part of it, right? So we saw the Europeans getting more interested in nuclear after the invasion of Ukraine because they realized they couldn't rely on Russian gas. But now the big switch has been big. So just in the last, well, since March, you had Amazon announce it's going to be a big off-taker of electricity from the Susquehanna power plant in Pennsylvania for one of their data centers. And then just in the last couple of weeks, you've had Microsoft announce they're going to restart one of the reactors at Three Mile Island. Oracle has announced it's going to use small modular reactors. They didn't specify by who. Google has done the same. They've specified they're going to use, I think it's Kairos Power for their one of these SMR developers. Their project. So it's a sea change, really, because big tech has the money and they need and they have the demand.
So when you let and this is something that a little bit above my pay grade, but when you're saying demand, sounds to me just kind of putting two together. These data centers, they draw so much energy. They need something that's more powerful or more reliable.
Yes, both.
OK,
so exactly. So and this is the other part, Mark, that's really key is that, you know, for years now, these companies have been wrapping themselves in their wind and solar mantle, right? Oh,
yes.
We're buying all this renewables and alt energy and wind solar. We're the biggest buyer of wind solar, blah, blah, blah. But now along comes AI. And with massive new power demands, we're talking hundreds of megawatts and even gigawatts, thousands of megawatts. And they're realizing, oh, gee, all the solar and wind, it's not that great. And we can't run our big AI data centers on solar and wind because the sun doesn't shine at night and the wind doesn't blow all the time. So really they were kind of backed into a corner, I would say, and I don't think that's an exaggeration to say, oh, finally, they're saying, oh, yeah, nuclear, that's the way to go.
So let's go back to something you said. I know you wrote about this with the solar and wind sectors. Part of this with climate change, we all know this, is follow the money, right? And you have huge, huge tax incentives and, you know, money that gets thrown at these so-called energy companies with solar and wind. And, you know, this isn't even close when it comes to the money that nuclear gets because we haven't focused on that. So can that potentially maybe turn around? And what happens to the wind and solar producers?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, they're facing a lot of challenges. Wall Street reported on this just today, I think it was, the pressure solar developers are under, because I've written about this many times, and it's an issue in Missouri, it's an issue in Illinois, Ohio, it's an issue from Maine to Hawaii, land use conflicts over solar projects and wind projects. I've written about it, I've cataloged it in the Renewable Rejection Database, which is on my website, robertbryce.com. I've written about it on bryce.substack.com. Local communities all across America are saying, we don't want these massive projects. We don't want these landscape-destroying, ag-land-destroying solar and wind projects. So that is another reason why the tech companies are going to nuclear, is because you simply can't build enough solar and wind to meet the massive demands of society, much less AI.
You know, my family lives in Chicago. I grew up there until I was 14 years old. I take the trip, and we did this about a month and a half ago from St. Louis to Chicago on I-55. And you get up to near Bloomington Normal in that area. And the first time, I hadn't taken that trip in a while. And a few years ago when I took it, I thought we were being invaded by aliens, because you have these, and this was during the evening, so I saw all these lights, Robert. But it's all of these windmills up there. And it just looks awful. It just ruins the whole landscape and everything about a rural community, but that's where all the incentives have gone, right? You even report here, solar is getting about 300 times more in tax incentives than nuclear. Wind is getting 70% more. So follow the money.
Yeah, sure. So why aren't we building nuclear? Well, again, follow the money. Why would anyone take the risk? And there has been a lot of risk, let's be clear. There's political risk, right, that you're going to face a bunch of opposition. There's technology risk, because some of these new reactors, they're taking longer to build, like such as at Vogtle 3 and 4 in Georgia. They were twice the money and twice over time in terms of the budget. I mean, they were not cheap projects. So there's a lot of risk. Whereas with solar and wind, well, it's a lay down hand. Why wouldn't you take the big fat federal subsidies to build solar and wind? Oh, and you get to say, oh, by the way, we're, you know, green this, green that. But the bloom has fallen off the rose here, I think. I've been a long time wind and solar, proudly so. You know, these are what we've seen is an alliance of big NGOs, big banks, big law firms against small town America and rural America. And you even see it in Illinois, your home state, where some of these big solar companies are suing small counties to try to force them to take projects they don't want.
Yeah.
Oh, that's terrible. Robert, it's Sue. I have a question. I mean, what do they tell themselves now that we've been, oh, pro-wind, wind is so great, oh, solar is so great, oops, we're now doing this, which is nuclear. I mean, then does the government change? I mean, how do you see this going from here?
Yeah, that's the interesting part, because let me piggyback off that, because to Sue's point, you have a graphic in your piece, and you say even if the U.S. has 10 new reactors, they would only equal about 1% of U.S. capacity?
That's the other part of this that's key to remember. And you know, I've been saying the same thing now, Mark, for 15 years, natural gas to nuclear. If we're serious about reducing CO2 emissions, regardless of what you think about carbon dioxide, if we're serious about small footprints, preserving open space, I'm a longtime bird watcher. That's one of the reasons why I'm so pro-nuclear. But yes, I mean, the subsidies are just incredible. And they've been this, you know, the tour for so long that, you know, this has been what the big banks, you know, the big Wall Street banks love it, because they sell the tax credits. That's how they make money. One of the ways they make money. So, you know, this is to unravel. And the fact that it's being led now by big tech, I think, is very telling.
Yeah, that is telling.
Also, that some of these technology companies are now going, or they're announcing deals with small reactor companies. But to your point about the scale of the U.S. electric grid, we can't forget that. 1,300 gigawatts of capacity. Well, you install 1 or 2 gigawatts, well, It's not going to make a big difference overnight. It's going to take decades.
We're gonna let you go because it's time, but also we need some nuclear power on your cell line because we don't have the best line here this afternoon. And also, Robert, I will tell you, now that you kind of confess, I don't know if you did this accidentally or not, but you're a bird watcher. I can't, like, I almost envision you, and we've never met, but like Mr. Howell and Lovey out there in the woods looking for birds. Is that the image that I should have conjured up? I'm not sure. But I didn't know you were a bird watcher. See, we learn things on the Mark Reardon Show, right?
Well, in fact, I've just returned from Chile, which is one of the reasons why I'm
that's
stumbling around a little bit. But we went bird watching in Chile as along with a business, did a speech down there on mining.
Good
for
you. Good for you.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have you back. This is great stuff, and I want to have further conversations because I'm encouraged. Thank you, Robert Bryce. Appreciate it.
Thank you,
Mike. All right, a couple things before we get to audio cut of the day. We have Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. Jane, State Rep Donna Behringer, GOP consultant Greg Keller, all on the show tomorrow. Also, I want to guide people into my trip to Greece that we're taking in late April, early May with 97.1 FM Talk listeners. There's not a lot of space on this. I put the details. You can go to defineddestinations.com. Great website, has all the information. But if you just go to the top of my Twitter page, which is at Mark Reardon KFTK, I have pinned it right at the top. You can find all the details. Would love to have you in Greece next April.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
So I'm going to get off of Kamala and some of that politics for a second. This is rather stunning to me, and I'm going to use this. This is from Chicago. Maybe it's not stunning because it's from Chicago, but this is happening right here in St. Louis as well. I just want you to know. Now, these conversations that you're about to hear took place a few years ago, but these are all people that are part of Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson's administration, and they're having a discussion on a Zoom call about defunding and abolishing the Chicago Police Department. They're not being too shy about it here. Oh, no, listen.
But yeah, as an abolitionist, when I say defund the police, it is through an abolitionist lens. But again, I'm thinking about abolition more as presence than absence. So thinking about the life-affirming things that we need to build up as we tear down the things that are taking our lives.
So that is Kennedy Bartley, who is now the head of intergovernmental affairs in the city of Chicago on Brandon Johnson's staff, saying that she makes $192,000 a year. This is Alex Goodwin, who makes $103,000 from the taxpayers of Chicago. She is the senior, this is hilarious, she's the senior advisor to the mayor of Chicago, wait for it, on community safety. I'm not joking.
I think that it's really important that we understand how all of these things are connected. And like when we're talking about defund, you know, there's a reason that like defund also includes like cops out of schools, like cops out of CPS. It's not just like cops within the, you know, CPD that are focused on like within the Chicago Police Department, but policing as an act and as an institution.
So they want to defund
people
the police.
Nuts. Look,
they are nuts. And this is what happens. This is what's happening in the city of St. Louis. This next guy, Deputy Budget Director, Community Safety. These are the people in charge of safety. Adam Slade in Chicago.
There are many flavors of defund, if you will. But also, I think a lot of folks that have worked on these issues for years and decades have tried the reform route and have seen reforms pass and progress made, then to be ignored in the future. When we see reform fail, what is the next step? Structural change.
Yeah, and structural change, Sue, is defund. They want to dismantle the police department.
Let's try somebody attacking them or their house or something and see what they do then.
Well, wait, you got to hear this because some of this is just, it's just really laughable.
Other thing I'm thinking about in terms of like defunding is the costs that are associated with police that we don't necessarily think about. So like surveillance technology.
She wants to take everything. Yeah, anything that police might use to catch. What's the role of the police?
To protect people? To protect the people.
To arrest criminals,
yes,
right?
Correct.
People that are shooting African-Americans.
Yes.
The police, this is what's going to really be illustrative here. They think it's the cops. They still think, just like Cori Bush, they think it's the cops that are killing black men in Chicago.
Equipment. Capital costs of like maintaining buildings and the various things that police use to like wreak havoc on communities.
Yeah, wreak havoc on communities.
I just want to zero in on this like graph on the left. This is maybe the thing that is helping me sleep so well at night right now, knowing that ShotSpotter stock continues to drop. Legally, technically, I'm not allowed to say that, but you know what? It is what it is. I don't care.
So she's a member of the staff of the mayor of Chicago. She was talking about shot blocker technology, which alerts the police to when gunshots are ringing out, and maybe you can protect someone and keep them from being shot.
Yes.
But she doesn't like that, and she's proud of the fact that their stock is going down.
Frustrating to me that, like, man, like, the police lynch black folks every day. You know, shoot black folks and brown folks and, you know, down every day in the street, and there's still
what?
Black folks. It's and brown folks who are like not abolitionists, who are pro-police. And it's like, these are like your, you know, like these are the folks like making us prematurely meet our makers, you know? And like, we're still pro. And it's just like, that's frustrating, but like abolitionists not going to bring our people.
So did you understand what she said there? Uh-huh. She said, if you're black and you live in the city of Chicago or the city of St. Louis, and you want the police to help you, you're part of the problem. You're helping young black people go to their graves. Even though the cops aren't shooting the young black people, it's the black gangbangers that are doing that. Black men are killing other young black men and black women, and they're doing it at astounding rates right now. In fact, the FBI just redid their crime figures, and they prove that violent crime is going up, even though Tish and the gang here in St. Louis and Brandon Johnson are trying to convince you otherwise. So these are people who are running. Those are the people you heard. They're running safety for the city of Chicago. And you wonder why dozens of people are shot on a regular basis every weekend. And that's not just Chicago. That's right here in St. Louis as well. Those are the kind of people behind the scenes. Just look at the Board of Aldermen. Good Lord. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Reardon Roundtable. Have a great Thursday night.
Get more at 971talk.com.
I'm Sally Helm with the podcast History This Week. In each episode, we serve as your eyes and ears into history's biggest events and the lesser-told stories, ones you might not even know happened. Find History This Week on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.